We're going to talk about something which I don't think anybody has ever properly explained. And don't worry, I will not explain it today as well. We'll just realize that we're being confused with something which people have been confused for years. And that is this tension between Yaakov and Yisrael, or this identity of Yaakov, or the name change of Yaakov to Yisrael. I mean, I do challenge anyone to go through every place in Tanakh and to give one explanation for all of the uses of Yaakov and all the uses of Yisrael. And if you come up with that, I'd be very happy to hear it. We will see some of them today, but we're going to actually get a little bit beyond that. Yaakov's name actually gets changed twice. The first time is by this mysterious... you can say this a little bit further. This nameless, mysterious, I guess you have to throw in the word enigmatic at some point there as well, adversary, where Yaakov, in the middle of this scene where he's about to be reunited with his brother, he gets attacked along the way. Actually, a number of times people have asked me which chapter in my book I like the most. So the one in Vayishlach I like the most. And that one in Truma. But it's worth buying the book just for what I wrote on Vayishlach. Some of the other things I'm not going to vouch for. But if you're interested in that particular struggle, so take a look. Let's read. Vayomer Elav Mashemecha Vayomer Yaakov. This nameless adversary says, "What is your name?" And Yaakov says, "My name is Yaakov." Vayomer Lo Yaakov Yeamar Ot Shemecha. Your name will not continue to be Yaakov. Ki im Yisrael, for your name is, for you should be called Yisrael. Ki sarita im Elohim v'im anashim v'atufal. For you have struggled with, and over here it's not that clear what the name Elohim means, if it is a machloket, if it's kodesh or chol, if we're talking about a divine name or if we're talking about a name of strength. For example, judges are called Elohim, or we have early in Bereishit the Bnei Elohim. So over here there is a machloket. If you just want to quickly see where that's written in Source 13, the Minchat Shai does write that. Ki sarita im Elohim yeshmi razal yeshmi rabenu zichron levracha mifreshim oto kodesh v'yeshmi mifreshim oto chol. And some say it's chol means it's not a divine name; it's rather this thing of power. V'yishal Yaakov v'yomah higid din hashemecha, and Yaakov asked, "Tell me your name." V'yomah lama zeh tish'al l'shmi v'yivarech etosha. Why are you asking to answer your question with a question? It sounds like this adversary is in fact Jewish, but none of the commentaries say that. See, the problem with the name being changed over here is that it is presumably, and I say presumably because we'll follow most of the Mefarshim, most of the Midrashim, presumably it's an angel. What rights do angels have in terms of giving names? That we don't know. The angel says, "This is your name. Do you go and change your name?" So perhaps for that reason, when we go to the next source, three chapters down the line, in Perek Lamed Hei, also in this week's Parsha, we find this time God speaking to Yaakov. Vayomer lo Elokim, Shimcha Yaakov lo yikare Shimcha od Yaakov. Sita. Lo yikare Shimcha od Yaakov, ki im Yisrael, yeshemecha v'yikra et shmo Yisrael. So your name will no longer be called Yaakov, rather Israel, for Yisrael is your name. So that should really end it. And by the way, what should then follow? What should follow is that, and from this point onward, it should be that he is never referred to again in Tanakh as Yaakov. He should only be called Yisrael from this point onward. And I suspect that most of us know that that's not the case. And as I said in the very beginning, trying to reconcile the distinction, trying to figure out exactly when is it Yaakov and when is Israel, is something which is definitely beyond us. In fact, in source number 3, Tav HaKabbalah, when he's explaining the name change, V'yeh im kein mashmu'uta ma'amar kan shelo yikre mehayom v'hala b'shem Yaakov ela b'shem Yisrael levad. If you think that's what it means, is that from this point on he will never be called Yaakov again, only Yisrael, v'zei efshar, one cannot say that. V'ze'iyev shalomar, one can't say that. Sherei hu yitbarach ba'atzmo karo b'shem Yaakov. That God himself continues to call Yaakov, Yaakov. So if that's the case, then what exactly is the meaning of this name change? So therefore, the Tav HaKabbalah, I say something which again, all of us should have understood by ourselves, and that is that even though Yaakov's name gets changed twice, his name doesn't really get changed. It's rather, he gets added a name rather than his name being changed. And of course, the question that comes up is how different should this be from the name change which Avraham undergoes, where we're told even in the Gemara that anybody who calls Avraham, Avram, is breaking a mitzvah from the Torah. Is breaking a mitzvah to say, for God says your name is not Avram, it's Avraham, so therefore you can no longer call him Avram again. You don't find anybody claiming that if anybody calls Yisrael Yaakov, you've done something which is terrible, and the name Yaakov has not been removed, the name Yaakov remains.
You say that the usual explanation is that Israel refers to the national destiny and Yaakov is
you, if you want, we can mention
saying,
that.
No, you know, I'm saying that something like deeper and more.
As I said, one second. To use that as the distinction, and therefore, obviously, this is an attempt to end the class very, very quickly today, and to save a lot of time and cut through all this, and say, oh, that Yisrael is the national identity and Yaakov is the individual identity. The problem is, once again, even if you take that distinction, read it in Sukkim, I challenge you to make it work in every single case. I could try it. If you were to ask me what my gut feeling is, I think it's as good as any other explanation. But I think that there is a little bit more going on. I think there is something a little bit deeper going on. Rashi points out, what again, for us, I guess now I'll be told is obvious in source number 4, Rashi points out that the two names indicate two different things, where the name Yaakov indicates Ekev, indicates something which is low, it indicates the heel, it indicates subservience, while the name Yisrael indicates struggling with God and something which is above. Although even that distinction is not that simple, because let's go back to the question, what does the name Yisrael mean? If it means struggling with God and man, so then the name Yisrael seems to point at a duality, got it? And if the name Yisrael means struggling with strong men and struggling with weak men, if the name is whole, right? It doesn't mean Elohim, it means strong men. So then why exactly is struggling with strong men and not so strong men, why is that all that different from the name Yaakov? So again, that question I'm just throwing out for right now. But Rashi does say that the names have two different indications, one of Yaakov meeting a higher calling, and the other Yaakov being on somewhat of a lower level. In fact, the name itself, Yaakov, would indicate not only subservience, but it would also indicate the struggle going on with Esav. If, for example, that the struggle with Esav is one day somehow rectified, then would he still be Yaakov, or would he be something else? So that's also something which needs to be thought about. The Ibn Ezra also states the obvious in source number 5, when he writes, Lo Yikresh Shemcha Od Yaakov, he says, Livado Ki Gam Yisrael. He goes, it doesn't mean the name was ever changed, it means he got another name added on. Which means instead of being changing from Yaakov to Yisrael, he now becomes Yaakov Yisrael, or Yisrael Yaakov, if you like that better. And therefore, according to Ibn Ezra, Yaakov is the first one to have two names. Okay? Which, by the way, is absolutely unheard of until modern times. Today you find people with three names and four names and whatever, but it's unheard of to find people hundreds of years ago that had more than one name.
But the Mishnah
says you
should not be
called anymore. Of course. Because Ibn knows the same secret as the Tav HaKabbalah, that God himself calls him Yaakov still. So how can God say you're not supposed to be called Yaakov and then still call him Yaakov? So obviously you can't say it really means you shouldn't call him, else God is going against his own word. Unless, of course, it means that you should not be called Yaakov again, but it doesn't mean now, it means in the future. So you'll never be called Yaakov again, and maybe that future didn't come yet. Yes? Of course.
Obviously,
you should not be called Yaakov anymore.
That's very good. Very often we do find in Tanakh where people's names don't indicate their actual birth names, but their names have to do with their title or have to do with their function or do with their role in life. Look, there is a mystical teaching that the day that the parents give the names to the children, they get some kind of Ruach HaKodesh at that moment, and they give them the name which is associated with that neshama. It's a nice thought, at least. I don't know. I guess that's the excuse whenever the fathers completely blow it, and they agreed on a different name, and then they give it and goes, the Ruach HaKodesh hit me, and that's what occurred. The Nitziv in source number 6, he struggles with these two names, and he says, Shimcha Yaakov, Adai Shimcha Yaakov, Shemara al Halichot HaTeva, that Yaakov deals with the more natural aspect, and in juxtaposition to this, the name Yisrael, therefore, will deal with the more miraculous. Again, this is a variation of this high versus low, but it's looking at it in terms of a more spiritual sense. But what he says at the end is interesting. V'omar lo Hashem d'mikol makom v'adai Shemcha Yaakov, hincha tzarich leze Hashem, shelo hakol ru'iyim l'nes, v'lishterer im Elohim v'im anashim. He's saying that this change from Yaakov to Yisrael cannot be an absolute change, because not all Jews at all times will be able to live on the miraculous level. And some of us will need more of a practical identity, and therefore the name Yaakov deals with the more practical, with the down-to-earth. And therefore, even though there is something miraculous about our people, miraculous about our destiny, nonetheless, that not everybody always operates on that level. So therefore, he sees this not so much as the national versus individual distinction that you raise, but he sees this as sort of two different functions that take place, the normal day-to-day function versus the miraculous. And he says, but you can't only function on miraculous, and therefore there needs to be both.
Is it possible that it's not as important what the two things signify, the fact that there are two opposites here, against each other?
Absolutely.
Just like you have with Abraham, the particular versus the universal, and you have the individual versus that you have.
Absolutely, and that's what we need to talk about more.
Cool, dynamic.
Correct.
It's a dynamic, it's a process.
It's a dialectic. But that's absolutely correct, because what we're saying over here is that the two names are necessary. Not that one name is replaced, but these are two different things which are necessary, and understanding that tension and how this works, we will need to continue. I mean, the truth is, if you already bring this up, I'll get way ahead of myself, and I'll point something interesting out about Yaakov, which makes Yaakov very, very different from the other biblical characters and certainly biblical heroes till this point. Let's look back at Avraham's life for a moment. Avraham is somebody who definitely has tension in his life and definitely has conflicts in his life. You can just, you know, again, just stream of consciousness to think about his conflicts. One conflict would be the conflict between Hagar and Sarah, who is the real wife. But when I say that's a conflict, you all say to me, what kind of conflict is that? That's not really a conflict. Why is it not a conflict? Why isn't it a conflict? Because it's resolved. But when Hagar gets pregnant and Hagar starts talking about Sarah, do you think there was a conflict at that point? Do you think that Hagar was pushing for a conflict? Absolutely. But the reason why you don't perceive it as being a conflict is because it was resolved. At the moment, it was front page news, but it was resolved. Hagar gets sent away. You don't think there's a conflict between Yishmael and between Yitzchak? Of course there is. But Yishmael gets sent away. What you notice in Avraham's life, and there's also in terms of Lot, there's a conflict. There are all kinds of conflicts in Avraham's life. But what happens with all of those conflicts? They all get resolved. And because they all get resolved, you don't think of them as conflicts anymore, because they're simply no longer conflicts.
Well, the latter one has existed till the present day.
But as far
ideologically, Hagar comes back.
All that is true, but with a different role. So, but not as wife. It's not the same relationship anymore. It's not the same relationship. I agree with you completely that each one of these conflicts that I'm raising right now are of supreme importance. I'm just saying, if I were to wake you up at 3 o'clock in the morning and say, quick, Avraham's wife, what was her name? What would you say?
Sarah.
Yeah, would any of you say Hagar? And there was another one also. I can't remember her name. Right? If I, right? No, no. Again, you want to tell me this is our narrow perspective? Fine. We're guilty of that. I'm just pointing out that there were definitely conflicts in Avraham's life. All those conflicts become resolved, even though that the resolution is not simple, and even though there are still ramifications of those conflicts today. See, Lane, that's really what you're saying. You're saying there's still ramifications of the conflict, even though in our mind it's completely resolved. But what makes it resolved? Because we know what is what. I mean, if you look in... If you go back and you look in Yitzchak's life, there's definitely a conflict there between Yaakov and Esav. But that conflict becomes resolved. Who is going to be the real progeny? Who is going to be the real son? Who is going to be the person to carry on the covenant? So you'll have to admit that as you read through early parts of Parshat Toldot, you're not so sure which way it's going to go unless you already know the story. When you know the way it ends, so that's cheating. That's not very fair. But as you're going through, as you're negotiating through the parsha, you don't know. And then suddenly Yitzchak, but you know, Vayichared Charada, right? He has this unbelievable fear, because now the reality has sunk in. He has made a mistake. Now this conflict is settled. One second. Once that conflict is settled, and Yaakov is the one who's going to be the primary son, and he's the one who's going to follow the line. The line will follow through him. Does that mean that now Yaakov's life is all simple and so on? No, now his life first begins to get complex, but my point is that the resolution of the conflict doesn't mean simplicity. The resolution of the conflict now gives us the mission of what we have to do. It doesn't mean that there's no more, that just like with Yishmael, it doesn't mean that all of the B'nai Esav of the world are there bowing down to us and saying, of course, you know, the Jews have the rights to the land, and the Jews are the chosen people, and so on. Instead, throughout history, they've tried to kill us. They've had crusades against us, pogroms against us, and a Holocaust against us. But is there a resolution to the conflict? Of course there's a resolution. The resolution is that Yaakov is the one who's going to follow Yitzhak and Avraham. What's interesting about Yaakov's life is that it's possible that there are no resolutions whatsoever in anything in his life. Everything is left open. Okay, who's the real wife, Rachel or Leah? Now you tell me how easy that is to answer that question. Who's the primary son? Is it Yosef or is it Yehuda? Which may be an extension of the same question I just now asked. And finally, you tell me what his real name is. Is it Yaakov or is it Yisrael? And you can't answer that question either. Which means Yaakov's whole existence is actually one of unresolved conflicts. And it's within this unresolved conflict that we will begin to understand the depth of who Yaakov is. Now, after I said all that out of order, let's continue. Source number 7, the Meshech Chachma, who struggles with this Yaakov Yisrael distinction, says, Shelo matzinu shehashem yitbarach yomar b'kol ha-Torah al Yaakov Yisrael. He says, you've never seen the whole Torah God referring to Yaakov as Yisrael. By the way, whether that's true or not, also I'll leave to you to figure out. Here you see the distinction between the national versus the individual. Yaakov b'kol makom shemidaber alav ba'atzmo. Yaakov is dealing with the individual. Rak makom shem daber b'hishtatuto el ha'uma kigon b'nei Yisrael o elokei Yisrael u'kiyotzebo. That means that he has this distinction very clear. Yisrael is the national identity. Yaakov is the individual identity. And Yaakov is never called Yisrael in any place in the Torah talking about the individual. Later on, we'll take a look in Parshat Vayechi and you'll tell me afterwards if that's the case. And if it is the case, then you have to reinterpret some sukkim. Rabbeinu Bechai in source 9 says, Da ki shem Yaakov mora al hashvelut. Yaakov is the low name. Ki ha'ekev shafel mikol ha'magmav aguf. The heel is the lowest part of the body. V'shem Yisrael mora al sora u'ma'ala. So therefore you have this distinction between the low versus the high, and that's the way that he negotiates with this. Rabbeinu Bachai also adds another thing in another place, which I hinted at earlier. V'shem Yaakov nemar al midot haguf v'inei haguf olam hazeh. Yaakov, which its name has to do with physicality, right? The heel itself is something which is physical, and therefore it has to do with this world. Yaakov al shem So he sees the distinction that Yaakov deals with the physical and Esav and Yisrael deals with the spiritual, while he also insists that Yaakov deals with Olam Hazeh, which seems to imply that the name Yisrael is part of Olam Haba and not necessarily part of Olam Hazeh. And if that's the case, then even in this future sense, your name shall not be called Yaakov. Maybe in the future, your name will not be called Yaakov. But still, at this point, it's still called Yaakov. He does not say that clearly, but that's what I would assume is a way of reconciling the difficulty. In Source 12, the Baal HaTosafot do try to deal with this question of why Avram's name is changed completely and Yaakov's isn't. So he claims that Avram's name change was part of Avram's conversion. But Avram wasn't Jewish. Avram gets a new name, Avram gets a Brit Milah, and Avram becomes a Jew. So therefore the name change indicates you can't go back to the old name. And the same thing would be true of Sarah and Sarai. But when it comes to Yaakov, Yaakov, he's saying, is born already as a Jew, and therefore the name change is just an additional name and does not indicate an existential, spiritual change which has taken place. That's number 12.
But hasn't he really changed after the struggle?
But then why is he still called Yaakov? That's still going to be the problem. The Kli Yakar sees a parallel with Yaakov's name change and something else. So in order to understand what he's going to tell us, he refers to a Gemara in Masechet Brachot. The Gemara is actually the commentary on the Mishnah, which is the machloket between the Chachamim and Ben Zoma, in terms of that you make reference to Yitzhak Mitzrayim by Leilot. Do you remember that from Haggadah, right? So the Gemara then talks about the Chachamim say La'atid Lavo, right? In order La'atid Lavo, which means the question as far as the Gemara is concerned, will we still speak about Yitzhak Mitzrayim once Mashiach comes? That's the question. Today, for us, the greatest form of redemption that ever took place was the redemption of the Jews being taken out of the land of Egypt and marched along to Sinai, then all the way to the land of Israel. In the future, when Mashiach comes, then the redemption that will take place then will make the former redemption pale in comparison. So at that point, when it pales in comparison, will there still be a need to even make mention of that redemption, or will that redemption be forgotten because the new redemption will be just so much more impressive? And as far as the Gemara is concerned, that's the machloket between Ben Zoma and the Chachamim, whether one should will still make mention in the future. Kli Yakar writes, Lo she'te'aker Yitzhak Mitzrayim Legamrei, I'm in source 14, Lo she'te'aker Yitzhak Mitzrayim Legamrei, It's not that one day Yitzhak Mitzrayim will be uprooted and no longer significant. It will just be, as I said before, paled in comparison. The miracles of the 10 miracles that took place leaving Egypt will simply be so unimpressive compared to the miracles that will take place when the final redemption takes place. So it would be ikar and tafel. That's the language which means primary and secondary. The zikaron nisim shalatid yu ikar, but the miracles that will take place in the future, that will be the primary miracle. The chen kan amru, and therefore here as well, and he's referring now to a midrash which is in source 15, which will continue the Kli Yakar. Lo sheyaker shem Yaakov legamrei, eliyet tafel, the shem Yisrael ikar. It's not that the name Yaakov is removed; it's just no longer the primary name. So it has to do with primary identity and secondary identity, and now with this new identity, it's not the other one disappears, it's just not as significant. So he's dealing with focus. There may be something in this comparison that the Kli Yakar is noticing, which may be the core of the entire issue, but as, again, we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. What he is saying is that there's a parallel. There's a parallel between Yaakov Yisrael and between Yetziat Mitzrayim and the future redemption. The Kli Yakar is correct that source 15 does go out and spell out. Tani Loshia Aker Shem Yaakov Eliki in Yisrael Yeshemecha Yisrael Yeikar B'Yaakov Tfila. It's not that the name Yaakov is removed. And by the way, you all realize why you have to say that. Why? Because it's still used all over the Chumash. So it's not that the name is removed, it's just, it's not, I don't know, I would say when you get married, but I guess that's a real bad comparison. But what I was thinking is, you know, in academia, I do spend this part of my day in university, so in academia, if somebody goes from doctor to professor, they don't call them doctor anymore, they call them professor. They're still a doctor, but they call them professor. And when someone goes from professor to rector or to president, they no longer call them professor, they call them the rector. And it's not that the other ones aren't true, it's just not as significant, because there's something else which is far more impressive, and that seems to be what we're being told over here, is that the names themselves, they're both true, but one is of far more significance. That's the way the Kli Yakar, and again, he's tying all this in to Yetziat Mitzrayim. We'll see as we continue why that may be significant.
They're going back to that.
Right, so why are they going back? Which means that there's something else going on. Correct. Now, I have a certain debt I had to pay to Mrs. Blitz. I use your sitter every morning, so I have to do that. I guess I... What? So she asked about this concept of Yaakov being known as... identifying with this idea of Rachamim. Why is he called Rachamim? Which means Avram is called Chesed, which we understand. Yitzchak is called Din, which again I hope we understand. Yaakov is called various things. Yaakov's Midah, Yaakov's basic spiritual identity, is called a whole bunch of things actually. One of them is Rachamim. And the question that came up apparently more than one year, which I've successfully avoided till this point, was why is Yaakov identified with Rachamim? If you want to have a sense of how many different names or spiritual identities are Yaakov's compared to, take a look at source 18. Source 18 is a very interesting source. It's by somebody who you may or may not have ever heard of. His name is Moshe de Leon. Moshe de Leon is the individual who, according to secular scholars, was the person who wrote the Zohar. According to religious scholars, he was the one who published the Zohar. This is one of his writings that he has his own name to, which is certainly, according to everybody, one of his own writings. Either way you look at it, but that's who Rav Moshe de Leon is. A very impressive Kabbalist from the 13th century. V'hu yisod haruach hanam kim soda inyan hazeh hu hayateid hatakua v'ikar emuna kihi madrega ha'omedet ve'emtza mikol tzad mikol ever. Valkin sod ipar hamer kavahe el yana b'son shem shel shavim b'shtayim shemot shemakom b'zehu mizrach ruach habriach hatichon Yaakov Yisrael Saba Tiferet Yisrael Tzdaka Shemayim ha'el yonim rachamim mishpat v'harbeh acharim shegam b'inyam zeh shemot harbeh. There is this one thing which is the center. It's the you know what the briach hatichon is? Remember what that is? Good. I can have a class on that later on. None of you remember what this is? This is the main pole going through the Mishkan. We once had it. It's the Briach HaTichon. It's the main, I don't know. What do you call it?
Epicenter.
No.
It's the physical
pole. Pole, yeah. When you build your Mishkan, When you build a Mishkan, if you look at how you build it, you have one main pole going through all the others, which everything else is connected to. That's the thing which holds everything else together. Right? What is it that holds everything together? What is this? It's not the foundation, because the foundation was underneath. It's what holds everything together is called the Briach HaTichon. That is Yaakov. That is Yisrael Saba. That is Tiferet. That is Tzedaka, that is Rachamim. All of these things have to do with Yaakov. I mean, I don't, if you don't realize, how does the Mishkan to Yaakov? There is a Midrash, which is, they say, how do they get such a big piece of wood in the middle of the desert? Do you know the answer that the Midrash gives? Is that when Yaakov came down, Yaakov brought it down with him. That when Yaakov stopped in Beersheba on the way leaving Israel, it says he stops by Beersheba, and he stops by the Eshel Avraham. So Avraham planted the seeds for this Eshel. He planted, but Yaakov cut it down and brought it with him to Egypt. And they had it in Egypt the whole time, knowing that one day they're going to come back. Because what does Yaakov say? Yaakov says, I'm going to build a bayit. What does Yaakov say? I'm going to build a Beit Elohim. So the Midrashic understanding of Yaakov building the bayit is that Yaakov's, again, it's interesting. Who plants the seeds? Avram plants the seeds. But who's the one who represents the actual building? That's Yaakov. Because I would say, what in the world does Yaakov have to do the building of the Mishkan? Yaakov spiritually is known as the Briah HaTikvah. Yaakov is the center. Yaakov is the thing that holds things together. Now, till right now, you're just shaking your heads and you have no idea what I'm talking about, right? What does it mean that Yaakov holds things together? What is that supposed to mean? So let's try to look at a couple of other sources and see how they understand this. Look at source 16, the Alsha. Writes, Abad HaShemesh, Yehigia Zman Yaakov. By the way, it's interesting. What is that? What is that referring to? Abad HaShemesh? Source 16. What? If you look at Perek Yud Zayin and Shemot, what's going on there? Perek Yud Zayin and Shemot, what's going on? It's a bit after Yitzhak Mitzrayim. It says it's waiting for the sun to set. And what happens when the sun sets? Yigia Zman Yaakov. Why? Because Yaakov represents the nightfall. Yaakov represents Arvit, Tfilat Ma'ariv. But let me explain something fascinating. Ki az rachamim shel midat Yaakov yagenu al banav. Here's the beginning of this idea of rachamim. Here at night, the rachamim of Yaakov protects the children. Zer omid vayihi lashon yachid biyadav lashon rabim shehush yachid midat Yitzchak midat Avraham. The source itself, by the way, is talking about the battle against Amalek. The battle against Amalek, I told you a couple of weeks ago, is when you have the Kol Yaakov and the Yadayim of Esav together, merged together, these two different sources together. Over here, he's telling us two things are coming together, but what are those two things? The two things, it's called rachamim. But rachamim is one thing. What is rachamim made up of? Rachamim is made up of the chesed of Avraham on the one hand and the din of Yitzchak on the other hand. Which means, when it really comes down to it, we have a question, and that is, what is the difference between chesed and rachamim? Because here we have a term that Yaakov is rachamim. What is rachamim? The Gra tells us, in his commentary to the Zohar, in source 17, the chain Yaakov nikra ish tam, tam meaning complete, not meaning simple, tam means complete, tam v'nishlam. What does it mean that Yaakov is ish tam? Shekolel chesed u'gvura. That Yaakov combines the two together. So that's what we need to understand.
It's implicit that Rachamim incorporates pain. It's not pure kindness. There's another element to it.
Correct. Let's start out by noticing something.
Yeah. Can I just interject, if I may, a small part? This is always confusing me. I love the fact that Rachamim comes from Rechem.
Correct.
But Rechem implies absolute unconditional embracing love and doesn't have about it the implications of being.
Right, because childbirth is very painless and very...
No,
yes.
That's what I'm saying.
I know that. Because raising children is the easiest task you'll ever have in this life.
Okay.
anything else about that?
No,
correct.
Thank you.
No, but that absolutely... And by the way, that bothered me as well. I agree with you completely that the name... The word rachamim has an implication of rechem, and therefore it should be a kind of love which is unconditional, but you realize that there is something else going on as well, that to get to that unconditional love, you're dealing with a lot of pain as well. It's pain beforehand, it's pain afterwards. I mean, there is pain as well, and therefore this rachum of being unconditional love, there is something else there. And that something else is what we need to understand. Yeah? We'll see. Let's look at the sources, and then we'll see where we actually end up with this. Look at source 20 for a moment. The Magale Amukot, we mentioned him last week. Lefisha Avram Ish Chesed VeYitzlak Baldin Kasheh. Ve'ein l'mahra'a ad sheba Yaakov bal rachamim v'hichruya v'nimtza kishyehu kavur sham yecheset v'emet nifkishu shnayim mezakin v'echad mechayev v'tel yachid b'miyuto v'alacha kirabim. It's fascinating. Because what he says, when Yaakov is buried by the Marat HaMachpelah, till then you have attention. You have Avram versus Yitzchak, chesed versus din. When Yaakov comes in, he's rachamim, so then rachamim and chesed beat out din. But why that's exactly true is not clear, because rachamim itself is not pure chesed. Rachamim is something else. What rachamim is, we still don't seem to know. In source 21, Sefer Mavot l'Chachmata Kabbalah, V'chein Yaakov hayamer kava l'midat emet, shehi teferet rachamim, ki emet hi atorah v'hi rachamim memuzag ben chesed l'din. That rachamim is this thing between chesed and din. Now, I want to make an observation. And this goes back to what I had said before. How do we understand rachamim? And how do we understand Yaakov? And how do we understand these various aspects of life? And this may be the issue between Yaakov and Israel as well. Hegel taught us that when you have a thesis and you have an antithesis, then what do you end up having afterwards? You have a synthesis. Right? That's as simple as it gets. If you want, I can show you where the Meshech Chachma says this. Meshech Chachma, in source 22, he writes, "Vasesham Mizbeach, V'yajim Mizbeach, V'kule ha'inyan d'midato she'akov achuza v'train d'ro'in chesed v'din v'hu hamtakat ha'din ha'nikret rachamim." That when you have your thesis and antithesis, you have your chesed and you have your din, and then somehow they get merged together, you end up with rachamim. Okay? I'm not convinced that this is correct. I'm not convinced that all the sources will agree. I think there may be something else going on, and that's something which I had heard Rabbi Soloveitchik say, and I'll tell you the way that I heard him say, because if you read The Lonely Man of Faith, and you read other places, he's written this in different ways. But one of the questions that he posed was, if you look at the first chapter of Bereshit, you see certain things about man. If you look at the second chapter of Bereshit, you see certain things about man. And those things that you see are not necessarily the same. So I can assure you, at least one of the times that he spoke about it, this is the way he made the distinction. The first chapter, Adam does not know that he's lonely. The first chapter, Adam is all by himself. The first chapter, Adam is alone. Being alone is not the same as being lonely. In the second chapter, Adam realizes that he is lonely, and at that point is when Adam comes and forges a relationship with the rest of society. As I said, Rabbi Soloveitchik himself said this various times, various ways. He himself most likely got this distinction by one of the writings of Franz Rosenzweig, where he went into this distinction as well. Now, having said that, Rav Soloveitchik claimed that Adam in the first chapter is an individual, and Adam in the second chapter is part of a society. And he said, why does Adam need to be created twice? And his answer is very simple. Because we, as individuals, are both individuals and part of a society. We are both individual people, and we are also part of something larger. Which means, I assume many of you happen to be individuals, but you also may be mothers, you may be wives, you may be grandmothers, you may have other relationships. But which one are you? Are you the individual, or are you part of that relationship? So Rabbi Soloveitchik said that while a philosopher like Hegel and many things in this world point at a thesis, an antithesis, and then a synthesis, where the personality at the end becomes a synthesis of the two, he said Judaism in many, many cases is willing to accept an unresolved dialectic, whereby the thesis and the antithesis are both true, the resolution is in the acknowledgement that both sides are true, and not within one side or the other disappearing. I mean, think about the part of the difficulty of getting married, that beforehand you were an individual and now you get lost within a relationship. Is that what is supposed to happen? Or are you supposed to be an individual beforehand and you're individual afterwards, but now you're individual, which also is something else? Which means, do you lose the individuality? Is the individuality something which should be lost, or is it something that should be retained, but it's retained because there's now two different parts of this dialectic?
But there is some modification.
There may be modification, but, you know, in relationships where the individual disappears, that's not going to be the good relationship. In the individual, where the two individuals become greater individuals, and the thing which is put together becomes greater as well, it's not that there is a synthesis as much as that both poles have now become stronger. So now, if we'll keep that in mind simply as an intellectual model, obviously there's two different ways of resolving conflicts. One way of resolving a conflict is where the thesis and the antithesis now create something which is new. Now the question over here is, what is Rachamim? Is Rachamim the merger together, the thesis of Chesed and Gvura, or is it a situation whereby Chesed and Gvura live side by side, creating something new which is called Rachamim, but it's a completely different type of mechanical, let's say, spiritual mechanism? Has anything I just now said made any sense? I'll try as I go on. Where'd you lose me? Good morning, or what? Let's keep that in mind. Yeah.
How can we look at Chesed and Gvura as containment? I mean, not so much love and punishment, but something that's contained and something that flows without love.
I'm going to ignore you for a second because I want to touch something that you said, and you said no. Ignore that. Real love. Does real love require strictness as well?
Yes.
Or is real love chesed without any boundaries? Which means, when you speak of rachamim, the love of the mother, is that unconditional, as you said, but does that mean there's no din in it whatsoever? No bedtimes? You don't have to ever brush your teeth? As much chocolate as you want? Which is interesting, that real love will be associated with rachamim, but rachamim doesn't mean that it's the same thing as pure chesed.
Compassion is
correct, but that means this new thing, which has two poles to it, does create something else. And again, now you just said that I contradicted everything I just now said, because you can say that, but there is a synthesis. But let's continue. Yeah. Correct. Absolutely. And therefore, and I told you that then, the spiritual or the Kabbalistic writers see that Avraham underwent some kind of a spiritual transformation with the Akedah. And Avraham emerges from the Akedah a different person. But that's because Avraham was chesed, needed to go to a different level. Correct. That's the starting point. Okay. But all this is very nice, but we still don't know why in the world we associate the Midah of Rachamim with Yitzchak, with Yaakov. Where do you see any association between the two? I mean, you can talk all you want about it, but where do you see it itself? The Shlo writes, in source 23, Ad Sheba Yaakov Bikesh Rachamim Mazot, Amar Lefnei Kodesh Baruch, Ribono Shalom, Al Tikach Nafshi Mimenu, Ad She'atzaveh El Beiti, Et Banai, Et Bnei Banai, V'netarba. That there is something involved in Yaakov's death. And then, according to the Midrashim, I may have this someplace here, that Yaakov, before he died, he wanted to bless his children. So it said, this is where there's a source that people used to, here, it's over here a little bit further, that people used to die immediately, have a sneeze and die. So that's why you say, Well, bless you. This is... Here, continue a little bit. Shenema v'yefed r'me'ela v'yom el-yosef shemu komach ha'aretz v'gzu v'chalu shelo ya batuach miyom shenavar olam v'fiche chayav adam v'shat itusho lehodot l'kadosh baruch hu shehofcho mimavet l'chayim shenema itishtov and so on and so forth. In source 23 at the end, v'shamati kamasha omrim v'itusham l'yishutcha kiviti Hashem v'yafehu. Some people say that. L'yishutcha, right? I prayed for your salvation. What in the world is the Shlach talking about? That Yaakov, when he was going to die, said, at least I want to bless my children before I die. Which means Yaakov prayed for Rachamim. Again, he's going to die. But the Rachamim is, okay, I don't want to die immediately because I need to bless my children. I have one more thing I need to do. Now, that itself is interesting, but that's not the definitive source that we find with the Rachamim of Yaakov. If you look at the source 24, which is the Maharal, he writes, Aval midat Yaakov, shehu midat rachamim, hu davuk be'etzem lagamri, ki ze inyan harachamim, ahava v'hachibur, shekar bi'arnuza, ki ohev targum mirachamuhu. That you'll see that the targum will translate ohev as rachamim. V'chein b'loshim chachamim, lo ledin inish man demarachim le. V'dover ze yadua, v'ava hi hadavuk v'chibur be'etzem, shekasher davak nafsho, So what he is pointing out is this association between love and rachamim, but we still don't know why Yaakov should be associated necessarily with rachamim. The answer is actually remarkably simple. Somebody. The answer is that Yaakov is the first person in Chumash. He's the first person in Chumash who uses the word rachamim. The word was never used till Yaakov uses it, and that's in source 25. Ve'el shakai yitain lachem rachamim lufnei ha'ish v'shilach lachem et achichem acher ve'et binyamim v'ani kasher shafolti shafolti. Of course, this is when Yaakov finally agrees to send Binyamin down. And if you really think about it, that is, even though we can have many beginnings of the Galut, that is the beginning of the Galut. Because now all 12 sons have gone down to Egypt, this is it. They're not coming back. All 12 sons have gone down, the Galut is starting. When exactly the Galut begins is something of interest, but hold that for a moment. Here at least you see in the Chumash why Yaakov is associated with rachamim. He prays for rachamim.
Is he afraid that he says?
Yes, yes, yes. He says in source 25, "V'kel shakai yitain lachem rachamim." May God give you rachamim. Okay, so here you see Yaakov associated with the idea of rachamim. By the way, when Yaakov himself goes down to Egypt, if you want to see how complex this is, look at source 19. By the way, now you get confused. You weren't confused till now, but at least you'll understand your confusion. Look at source 19. The first time that rachamim is used is when the last of the 12 sons goes down. Look at the description when Yaakov goes down. You ready? Source 19. V'yisa Yisrael, v'kol asher lo, v'yavo be'er sheva. How is he referred to?
Yisrael.
V'yizbach zvachim l'lokei aviv Yitzchak. To his father? Okay, Aviv Yitzchak. Why, Aviv, of who? Of Yisrael. Good. Vayomer Elokim li Yisrael. Vemorot ha'layla. Vayomer Yaakov Yaakov. All this is clear to you, right? Vayomer Hineini. Vayomer Hanochi hakel Elokei Avicha. Al tira mireda mitzrayma. Ki lagoy gadol ha'simcha sham. Anochi ared imcha mitzrayma. Vanochi alcha gam alo v'yosef yashit. Yado ali necha v'yakom Yaakov v'shava v'yisu b'nei Yisrael et Yaakov avihim. Do you love all the times that just now switch back and forth between Yisrael and Yaakov? And again, if you want to insist national and so on, you can insist that. Just not so easy, but you can insist that if you like to. This is Yaakov going down to Egypt. Yaakov going down starts off as Yisrael going down, but it ends up Yaakov going down. But it's interesting It starts off with Yaakov traveling, but Yisa Yisrael. It ends up with Yaakov going, but B'nai Yisrael going. Yaakov going down to Egypt may be the issue which is behind this whole idea of Yaakov and Yisrael, and at least why it needs to come back to Yaakov. Try to get as much as I can into this, but when Yaakov davens, look at verse 27. Hinei Yaakov hitpalel kel shakai yitain lechem rakamim v'lo nisharu b'galut rak minyan elokim. Yaakov davens that it should go down to Egypt, but the amount of the galut should only be equal to elokim. What exactly does that mean? Elokim in Gematria, again, the Megaleh Amukot cannot stay away from Gematria, but the amount of time they stay in Egypt, he says, is equal to Elokim. Elokim equals 86. How long were they slaves in Egypt? How long were they slaves in Egypt? How long were they slaves in Egypt? V'dever Elokim Moshev Arela B'kel Shekai She'itain Rachamim Al Shem Zev V'lo Yu B'galut Rakoshi HaShe'yabud Minyan Elokim. Look back at source 26. Kinei Hastav Avar Elu Arbamot Shana Shenigzir Elavot Tainim B'Mitzrayim. How long were they supposed to be in Egypt? 400 years. V'geshim Chalaf Chalaf Lo Elu Matayim Be'Esr Shanim V'lo Hu HaGeshim V'lo Hu Hastav Amar Tanchum Ikar Tarchuta Mitrahu Kein Ikar She'avdun She'Yisrael B'Mitzrayim Shmonim B'Sheish Shanim Hoyu Misha'a Shenoda Miriam Perusha, Shetach Nikra Shem Miriam, Al Shem Shem Nemar, Vimru Et Chayeim, Miriam Lashon Mirur Hu. When did the enslavement begin? From the birth of Miriam. So over here it's saying 400 years is from the birth of Yitzchak. 210 years was the amount of time they were actually in Egypt, but they weren't enslaved. When were they enslaved? They were enslaved when all of the 12 tribes died. How much time were they actually physically enslaved? We're told 86 years. What did the Megaleh Ulmukot tell us? Why was it that we got a reduced sentence? Because that's Yaakov's davening. The Yaakov's davening, Yaakov asking for Rachamim, caused there to be din, judgment, combined somehow with chesed. Which means they're going to be slaves. How long? They're going to be slaves 400 years. How do you count? So as far as we're concerned, how do we count? And again, this we know all this already. How do you count the 400 years? You count from the day that Yitzchak is born. Because, again, we discussed this a couple of weeks ago. You discuss it from the day that Yitzchak is born. Why? Because when it says your descendants will be slaves, when do you start worrying about it? The day that you have a descendant. The day of descendant. From that moment, psychologically, there's going to be a fear. There's going to be angst. There's going to be concern that your descendants will be slaves. You won't worry about it until the kid is born. That's the 400 years. How much time were they actually in Egypt? 210. How much time were they actually enslaved? 86 years, which the Megaleh Ulmukot tells us now is Elokim, equals Elokim. Right, you have to spell it with a hey, not with a kuf, or else it won't work. It's Elokim, does not have a vav in it. And Elokim, of course, is Midat Hadin. So how long was the Midat Hadin? How long was the judgment? How long was that? It was 86 years. But the Rachamim is that it was only 86 years and no longer than that. Which means, again, this combination of the Chesed and the Din still remains. The Din is there. But the Din somehow gets limited to Din. What's Din? Elokim. Elokim is the name which is associated with Din, and therefore it's 86. That you followed? Let's continue. So the issue is that Chazal know something else going on over here. Source 29. Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ra'ui haya Yaakov avinu le'rei l'mitzrayim v'shal sha'ot shel barzel. Yaakov himself should have been dragged down to Egypt with metal chains. Right? He should have been chained and dragged down to Egypt, which means, what's the Gemara telling us? That the real enslavement of Egypt should have begun with Yaakov. Yaakov should have been enslaved. Somehow Yaakov, including the tefillah, including this idea of rachamim, including this idea of the chesed and the gevura, somehow either being merged or being counterbalances in Yaakov's life, somehow Yaakov succeeds in pushing off the time of the real enslavement and to be limited. From what we understand, by the way, the enslavement was limited and the Jews ended up getting out earlier than they needed to get out, and that caused all kinds of other problems on the other end of things. And that may be part of the issue why the real name Yisrael was not able to take the place of Yaakov, and why there needs to still be attention. Let me continue a little bit more. Source 31, the Sefer Eitz of Da'at Tov, tells us that Yaakov should have been dragged down, but God did it with far more dignity. That instead of Yaakov being dragged down as a slave to Egypt, Yaakov went down to meet his son, who is now king, or assistant king. And he says that all of this great glory that Yaakov got is part of this idea of rachamim, which means the enslavement should have happened differently. But this is the way it happens. And he goes further to say that that's the reason that Yosef goes down, that's the reason for Mechirat Yosef, and that's the reason why there was a famine, and that all of this was to create a situation that Yaakov goes down, but instead of going down as a slave, that Yaakov is never enslaved. That's what Source 31 tells us. Excuse me? And that is all part of this issue of Rachamim, of somehow the Din and the Chesed are counterbalancing. Yeah. Excuse me? Din and Gevura are interchangeable. Yes. Just trying to see how much we can skip. You look at Source 33. Nimtzami leidat Yitzchak etchil hagerut. When you read that Yaakov and Mitzrayim hitchil hashevi, rak shahaya behe'elan, it was hidden. V'naktim o dekol min galut v'shiyabud lo havi b'chumrit levad, it wasn't only in the physical, rak ruchaniyut, it's also in the spiritual. Yaakov going down to Egypt, he is enslaved. Why is he enslaved? Why is he enslaved? How can you talk about the slavery starting then? So the answer is very simple. The answer is that when Yaakov goes down, he's not Yisrael, he's Yaakov. And that was the shift that you saw, that Yisrael starts to go down, but God calls him, Yaakov, Yaakov. And after that dialogue, who continues to go down? Yaakov goes down. Although something else is interesting, they are B'nai Yisrael. But let's go the other way around. When does Yaakov get called Yaakov? Excuse me. When does Yaakov get called Yisrael? When does that take place? As soon as he enters back into the land of Israel. He comes back into the land of Israel. That's when the name is changed. So what does that then tell you? It tells you that the name Yisrael somehow has more of an identity in the land of Israel. And now when he's leaving the land of Israel, he is going to be referred to as Yaakov again. And again, even this distinction, I'm telling you, is not necessarily going to work in every single verse, in every single place, and so on. But I'm just looking at two simple things. When does the name begin? And when do we see this shift taking place? Let me point out another thing, which is part of our conflict that we can only start today, but not really finish today. And that's the other unresolved conflicts in Yaakov's life, namely the conflict between Rachel and Leah. Who is his real wife? And the answer to that question is, who's whose real wife? Yaakov's real wife is Rachel. Yisrael's real wife is Leah. Which is why when Yaakov comes to Israel and becomes Eretz Yisrael, and becomes Yisrael, Rachel dies, and then he's only with Leah. Do you want to see somebody actually say that, or is it good enough if I say it? Look at Look at source 46. Lumata Yaakov lakach shtehem Leah v'Rachel neged partzuf Yisrael Leah neged partzuf shtehem neged partzuf Yisrael Leah neged partzuf Yaakov Rachel. The man, and by the way, partzuf over here doesn't just mean face; it means a spiritual dynamic, a Kabbalistic spiritual dynamic. That neged partzuf Yisrael is Leah. Yisrael is related to Leah. Neged partzuf Yaakov Rachel, and Yaakov is married to Rachel. Baraya. As soon as he's called, Yisrael is when Rachel dies. And you look in the Pesukim, you'll see that it's right when God names him. If you're not clear about this, look in source number 2. God changes his name in Pasuk Yud. And right afterwards, it says in Pasuk Yud Zayin that she gives birth and she dies in Pasuk Yud Chet. Then immediately after the name change is when Rachel steps off the stage. And I want to explain something about this. This whole issue of Rachel and Leah and Yaakov and Yisrael are parallel to one another. That is what he said over here. You can find this concept in other places. You can find, for example, in the Zohar, in source 45, Valora Amel Yisrael Kigavin V'it B'Yisrael Arba Anafin Yaakov Yisrael Rachel Leah. Yisrael in Leah, Yaakov in Rachel. Raya Mehemna, source 45, that is the Zohar. The Zohar sees that as a clear distinction. Yaakov is married to Rachel and Yisrael is married to Leah. What is the function of Leah? She has all of these children. She is the mother of Am Yisrael. But Yaakov loves Rachel because she is his wife. So Yaakov, if you want to say the person, the individual, is in love with Rachel. That's his wife. But Yisrael, if you want to say this is the national identity, who is his wife? You can't put Leah aside. But the question, of course, is why it had to be this way. But if you look at source 43, the Midrash says this. Rav Chanin b'shem Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak Amar kevan sh'rav v'inu Yaakov ma'asim sh'rima Leah ba'achota natan da'ato l'garsha. When Yaakov understood what Leah had done, he wanted to divorce her. The Kevin Shapakta, Kadesh Baruch Bibanim, Amar Le Iman Shel Elu, Ani Magaresh. But once he saw that she started producing all these children, he said, I'm going to get rid of the mother of my children. This is not just an individual speaking. Uvisofu Modea Davai Vishtachavu Yisrael Arosh Mita, Miha Yerosh Mitato, Shalavinu Yaakov, Lo Le'av Rachel, Ikara. What he goes on to say, Amar Yitzchak, Rachel Haita Ikarosha Bayit, Kamo Shenema, Rachel, Akra, Ikara, Rachel. That means, who's the main wife? And this midrash go back and forth, who the main wife is, and of course the answer is that there are two main wives. There are two main wives because there are two different tasks, and this is not, like we discussed, the whole issue of Lemech. Over here what we see is that, for some reason, this got put together in this way, and I want to explain that reason. If we go back to Avraham and Sarah, we notice that between Avraham and Sarah, there are two different types of personalities. Avraham, and I've said this before, I've said this briefly, but I want to say this very clearly, and then maybe some of this will make a little more sense. Avraham is chesed. What is Sarah? Sarah is din. Sarah says, get rid of him. Right, Sarah? And then God says, listen to what she says. Sarah is the one who puts her foot down. Sarah is the one who says yes and no, and so on. Sarah is the tough one. Avraham is the softer one. Yitzchak takes after his mother. Yitzchak is din, and therefore when the Eved Avraham goes looking for a wife for him, who does he look for? He looks for chesed, because you need there to be a balance of chesed and din. I once made the terrible mistake of speaking about this by a singles Shabbaton in the Upper West Side. I try to explain why Yaakov had to marry Rachel and Leah, because Yaakov had different aspects to him. And therefore, there's an aspect that matches Rachel, and one that matches Leah. And there was a guy who raised his hand and says, that's like me. He was blaming his commitment issues on, sometimes I need Rachel, but every now and then I need Leah. I'm very sorry I brought this up. But there's something strange, because what is Rachel? Is Rachel din or is Rachel chesed? Is Yaakov din or is Yaakov chesed? Yaakov, not Israel. What is Yaakov? Ha'ish tam yoshevo halim. What is Yaakov? Yaakov, I mean, if I make this distinction between Yaakov and Israel, and there's a combination, and that's why I was talking about this unresolved issue, that Yaakov and Israel reflect two different aspects. Why is it that there's an aspect of Israel? And the issue is, and you know this Midrash. The Midrash is that everyone said that Yaakov was supposed to marry Rachel and Esav was supposed to marry Leah. Why does Yaakov marry Leah? Because he's supposed to. It's Midat Hadin, which means Leah represents the Din, the older one, right? You can't marry the younger one for the older one. Who's the one who's compassionate and plays along with this? It's Rachel. Rachel is the one who's full of chesed. The implication is very simple. And this is different than anything we've seen till now. Because till now, it's Avram and Sarah who are opposites. It's Yitzchak and Rivka who are opposites. But it's Yaakov and Rachel who are together and one and the same. And it's Esav and Leah who are together and the same. But the Esav and Leah are the ones that are supposed to be together. The problem is that Esav does not live up to his mission, and Esav drops out. When Esav drops out, now Yaakov is going to have to wear two hats. Now Yaakov is going to have to be more than just Yaakov. Now Yaakov is going to have to be Yaakov and Yisrael. Now Yaakov is going to have to marry both Rachel and Leah. Now Yaakov is going to have to have two different aspects to him, which means the merger together of Yaakov and Yisrael is parallel to the merger together of Rachel and Leah. And by the way, if you want me to really drive you crazy, I'll show you mystical sources that will tell you that Rachel and Leah are the same thing as Yaakov and Yisrael. They are the same thing. The only difference is that there the neshama got divided into two different bodies, and here the neshama had two different aspects in one body. But we're talking about the same thing. If you want to know who said that, Rav Yashiv said that. Rav Yashiv's grandfather was known as the Leshem. He writes that in Source 47. That this issue of Yaakov and Israel directly parallels the issue of Rachel and Leah. But I'm saying the background for all of this is a very simple issue. And that goes back to this idea of what Esav did and what Esav didn't do. If you look at the end of Source 48, the Shem Yishmor writes, Me'ata l'fiya kavanah shayta b'yitzirat Yaakov ve'esav, sheze yizkeh yedei aseh tov v'zeh yedei sur meira, haya zivugim mitkila ha'yitzira na'ot lahem, Rachel li'Yaakov v'le'ah le'esav, uvedai kach haya b'hachzarat b'hachrazat ha'malach bat ploni l'ploni. That means before they're created, the malach comes and says, Yaakov is going to marry Rachel, and Esav is going to marry Leah. That even though a batko comes out saying you're supposed to marry them, but if you mess up, you lose that zivug. And he goes on to say that what is the whole problem over here? The problem is that Esav backs out. What happens when Esav backs out? So please pay attention. The original mix was supposed to be Yaakov and Rachel forming a house, a bayit, completely of chesed, working together with the house of Esav and Leah based upon din, that should have been the next generation where the Avraham and the Yitzchak, or really the Avraham Sarah model and the Yitzchak Rivka model, now come to a new level, and all of them working together create a new thing called, and for the lack of a better term, I'll call it B'nai Yisrael. That doesn't happen. Why doesn't that happen? Because Esav backs out. Esav's din manifests itself in a very different way. Esav backs out. So now what are you left with? Now you're left with Yaakov has to reinvent himself, leave the Ohel, become somebody different, become an Ish Sadeh, take upon the role of Esav as well. But when he takes upon the role of Esav, he now becomes Yaakov Yisrael. But another thing happens, and what's interesting is that this happens before the previous completely happens, is that now he has to marry Rachel and Leah as well. And there are different roles, there are different tasks. But when Yaakov clearly becomes Yisrael, which is the struggle of man against man, against divine things, or against strong men, and so on. When he does become Yisrael, Yisrael's proper shidduch is Leah, and at that point Rachel steps aside. I hope we didn't do too much today, because I was wondering or concerned about how much to try to do, and I skipped a lot as well. But let me just go one step further, because obviously there are things to continue with, but we do have to stop. The Galut was not complete. The Galut was modified by Rachamim. Because the Galut was modified by Rachamim, it's possible that not everything that was supposed to take place in that Galut took place. It's possible, therefore, that the Geulah was not complete. If the Geulah is not complete, there will be a need for another Galut. There's going to be a need for another Galut. There will be a need. No. We've experienced that. Therefore, there's a need for another Geulah. And when that Geulah takes place, then the first Galut is forgotten. When that first Galut is forgotten, the second Galut becomes so much brighter. The names Yaakov and Yisrael, we were told earlier by the Kli Yakar, reflect the same issue. That the names of Yaakov and Yisrael, Yaakov is the name, that when he goes into Israel, he becomes suddenly Yisrael. Or that comes to the fore. One is Ikar and one is Tafel. When they go into Galut, then the name Yaakov becomes again to the fore. But that Galut is a reflection of Yaakov's praying for Rachamim. And the praying for Rachamim does take this Galut and limit it to only 86 years. Keneged Elohim, Keneged Midat Hadin, Keneged the minimum time that it can take place. That's the din, that's Elohim, that's how much it is. The good in that there is that's what we needed at that point. What you're saying is, why don't we get it over with at that point and go on? And that's why there's a lot more to talk about when we move towards the idea of Galut Mitzrayim and Yitziat Mitzrayim. But what we're told then is that eventually there will be another Geulah, and that Geulah is, and again, the words of the Kli Yakar, that is parallel to the name Yisrael. And at that point, the Yaakov will be pushed aside, and this manifestation of Yisrael truly being, again, a combination of Yaakov and Yisrael, because it all comes down to one, of Rachel and Leah, and it all comes down to one. All of this is also related to the idea of Rachel being buried on the side of the road, when they're carried off into Galut the next time, for her to be able to pray that they're going to come back. All of this related to it. And how is Rachel praying for all of the Avam Yisrael? They're not her children. The answer is that, of course, they're her children. And that this relationship between Rachel and Leah is far more interesting than when you just read the Pesukim. When you start to read between the lines, and again, read the Pesukim in Yirmiyahu, Rachel is crying for her children. There's a midrash that I skipped over here. How did Rachel get pregnant? Leah was crying for her and davening for her. Which means that the whole relationship was far more complicated than when we just read the Pesukim. Yaakov is both chesed and din. That's what Rachamim is. It's not the synthesis as much as that these two different poles exist. These two different poles reflect Yaakov and Yisrael. These two different poles reflect Rachel and Leah. And these two different poles reflect as well Yosef and Yehuda. And they, of course, represent Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David. And all of these things come together. The problem is we don't have enough time to explain completely how they come together today. So we'll have to continue at another time. Next week, I am not here. My father has agreed to take my place. I just don't know if he knows that yet. But he has agreed. Is there sugar in Hanukkah? I'll be back by then. Yeah, we should be off Hanukkah. We should be eating Sukkot.
Why can you ever hear about Naomi Asa where she's
buried? They say Marecha Machpeah.
Well, okay.